Paul Adderley and his quintet with Janine. Of course, Julian Cannonball Adderley is on alto sax, Nat, his brother, is on cornet, Bobby Timmons piano, and Barry Harris also on piano, Sam Jones on bass, and Louis Hayes on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is open forum today. The opportunity for you to raise issues that you think are important and warrant closer attention. The number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask you to streamline your thought and just get to it and go at it in a nice linear fashion so that we can get as many calls as possible and people reacting to what it is you offer. And while you do that, while you get yourselves together for your phone calls, I just wanted to mention, very often, of course, on this show, I just seldom do it, but it's worth doing today. You know, when I talk about something and, you know, just as I call it is just the way it happens. And it happens that immigration was one of these things. Yesterday, I talked about it again. This is a subject that we've been discussing here. But I talked about the fact that one of the things that would happen more than likely would be that there would be a kind of fight between African Americans and Latinos over this question of immigration and amnesty for undocumented workers. And what do you know? Yesterday, a group describing themselves as an across-the-board group of African-Americans in leadership positions across the country wrote to members of the bipartisan committees that have been tinkering with immigration legislation, and wrote also to the Congressional Black Caucus and to many other state governments and so forth. Regarding this, they expressed the view that African Americans are going to be harmed by the immigration bill if it is passed in its current form. And this is unfortunate because in the end, it is about the administration really using, this is the way I see it, using the Mexican community to allow the under the radar passage of legislation to benefit the tech gurus, as we had here discussed just last Friday. And the diversion is that in doing so, they know that predictably they would instigate a kind of very hard feelings between these two communities. And so it has begun. I just thought I would note that. The number 888-874-4888. And Sarah, you're on the air. Hello? Is Sarah there?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, sorry. My phone. I got this new phone. I do apologize. I put it on mute by mistake. But greetings to you, Eutrice.
Thank you.
This too. This is open mic, right?
Yes, it is.
And you said to be succinct.
Wherever possible.
Okay. No going into the weeds. With just stay on topic. Okay,
yeah, stay on the main highway. Don't take us for the scenic cruise.
Yes, ma'am. What I was going to talk about, I don't know if you had a chance to read Yvette Carnell. She wrote an article about the black church and its betrayal, basically the betrayal of the black community. Perhaps that might be a guest that you might be interested in having on your program, Eutrice, Yvette Carnell, as well as Pascal Robert. He is an American of Haitian descent. And he has written several articles for lots of publications, and he has been talking the same thing as you've been saying about what's going on with the Haitian refugee situation, how they're not being allowed to migrate to the U.S. So those are two guests, especially Pascal Robert, that you might be interested in having. It's you know, of course, the last name is spelled as Robert, but
right.
Pascal. So those might be two you might be would like to have on. But to speak on what you were talking on, I'm going to touch on the immigration issue briefly, as well as to tie in with the voting situation. I do agree with you in what you were stating, that the face of the immigration policy has been plastered as being Hispanic, Latino, and Central American immigrants. And we have allowed ourselves in the black community to get sidetracked with that, as well as with the gay issue, and allow it to submerge what is really going on with us in this community. And yes, there's a problem with immigration, and we need to make sure that immigration is a broad, covers all angles, because it's not only the Hispanics. We have other people in other Caribbean nations, as well as in Africa and Asia, that could also possibly benefit from this policy. But as you say, they want to kill this immigration bill, because right now, I don't know if you're aware of what's going on down in Haiti, how they're putting in this economic empowerment zone down there, and they're bringing in a lot of the unfinished work from Asia, and they're bringing it down there, these sweatshops, and they're moving it back into Haiti, and they're having these people work for slave labor doing the finishing products from China and other areas, Bangladesh and those other areas. They're bringing it down there, and that's what they're doing down there. So that is having an effect. It's going to have an effect to us up here, because we're already being swamped up here with other immigrants, and mostly it's from the Latin and the Central American region. So these are issues that have to be addressed. My beef that I have with the Congressional Black Caucus and all of these other misleaders that we have in our community, who is running around here trying to tell us that what the immigrant policy is the same as black folks' policy up here, it is not. Our situation is totally different than what is coming than these new immigrants coming to this country. We never got what was supposed to be given to us as a people as a result of the struggle. So now that they are trying to conflate it and bring all of these other immigrants, throw it on top of us and have us fight at the bottom like a dog fighting over a bone.
Well, and you see, in a way, we can't have it both ways, because I did remark very early on that this discussion about immigration reform was markedly devoid of black input. Mm-hmm. I did say that.
Yeah.
And I did remark that it was going to be very important because of the sizable population of African and Caribbean immigrants in the United States, that it was very important that that voice be included. But that was X'd out. Nobody in the Senate, well, we only have one now in the Senate, and he's temporary, but nobody in the House seemed to take an interest in immigration reform, and this was an extremely important issue. So the marked absence of that kind of input allowed for the derailing of this. Well, it wasn't derailed because, you know, this legislation is proceeding according to plan. And
yeah.
Again, it's not even about Mexicans. It's not even about them. It's about using them. Because the fact is, as I said and reminded the audience yesterday, this plan, if it goes through, puts the people who they say this is supposed to be to the benefit they will have to wait 13 years before they could even begin to apply, and they have to pay fines and all these kinds of things. They have to go through a background check to see if they mm-hmm. if they committed any crimes in the interim 13-year period and so forth. It's not about them. This legislation is about getting the market to suit the high-tech gurus. We laid that out. So when people are talking in the sense that, well, gee, you know, they're not doing what we want them to do, well, where else is government doing what African Americans want to do?
Yeah,
is it being done?
It has never happened, which is why yeah. Yvette Clark out of New York, she is of Jamaican descent. Why isn't she being prodded out of New York and those other areas. Was it Hakeem Jeffries, who's a new congressperson? These are people that we need to light a match under them, because they get up into D.C. and they get what is normally referred to as the Potomac fever, where they hobnob with the people, the rich and famous, who they have seen only on TV. All of a sudden, these people invite them to dinners and cocktail hours, and their head get totally blown, and they forget their constituents.
But nobody punishes them. African Americans say, well, you know, how tough it is and all this kind of nonsense. You know, this is ridiculous. Yvette Clark's mom, Una Clark, was a congresswoman, and her district is heavily Caribbean. Mm-hmm. So is Jeffrey's district, heavily Caribbean. So I don't understand why it is that we are not aiming where we ought to aim. But that is a total failure, a collapse of interest on this central question. I mean, we have people standing in. We don't know to what degree they actually represent the interest of the community. We have people like somebody named T. Willard Fair, president and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Miami. He signed the letter. We have V. Durant, who signed the letter. I don't know who V. Durant is. Leah V. Durant, Progressives for Immigration Reform. Frank Morris, PhD, a board member of Progressives for Immigration Reform. We have a group called, even from the conservative community, the Brotherhood Organization of a New Destiny, the Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, and radio host of the Black Sphere, Executive Director Kevin Jackson. We have a bunch of people who decided in the breach. This is the problem. When they install leadership, people will just come in. Whether they, we have no currency.
I agree with you,
as who is stepping forward and who is not stepping forward.
You see, Patrice, as Alton Maddox has said over and over again, and I've been repeating for years, black folks don't have an education when it comes to this voting thing. We have been used as a scare tactic. That's how we vote in this country, is people scare you to tell you to pick the better of two evils, as if though the devil needs to be advocated. He can do it all on his own. He don't need no one to advocate for him. But this is how we've been operating, is we run scared, we take bullet points, and that is what we use, because we have no idea behind. If your main focus is on gay marriage, gun control, and abortion, and you have a candidate out here that's what they're talking about, but everything else behind that is totally opposed to what you would stand for, you don't care. That's all the three things that you see, and that's what you've been trained to look for, and that is what you're going to go and vote on.
The sad fact is, and we have to say it, the sad fact is, even among African-American leadership, this is not a priority item. You understand? This is not a priority item. There is a schism there that we have not been able to forge. It just can't seem to bridge that gap. But hopefully, this teaches yet another lesson about leadership that should be proactive rather than reactive. Thanks, Sarah, for joining us today
setting the pace.
Thank you. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Eutrice. Well, I'd like to talk about our precious environment.
Okay.
And, I'm reading here, it says that the natural catastrophes and human-induced disasters caused $186 billion, with a B, in economic losses in 2012, and $77 billion in insurance losses, making it the third costliest year on record for insurance. It turns out that there's a campaign called fossilfree.org, and if you put in the website gofossilfree.org, or if you Google the words fossilfree.org, this is a disinvestment campaign in fossil fuels, and it's run by Bill McGibbon from 360.org or 350.org, and it's basically a lot of hundreds of universities are taking part in this. It's about personal investment. It's about institutional investment, and I think it's time, because, you know, the coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear industry, they're the perfect examples of privatizing the profits and socializing the losses. We the policyholders of insurance companies, are going to pick up the losses because of the amount of CO2 that these companies put out, creating all the greenhouse gases. Last year was the hottest year on record, and creating these unbelievable storms, because the hotter it is on the planet, the more heat that's captured, the more evaporation off the surface of the ocean. And once you have the more and more water in the air, it's like when you put a pot on the stove, that you turn up the heat, and the water starts moving around and boiling. And that's what's happening to our atmosphere. It's moving around faster and faster. We'll get bigger tornadoes, bigger hurricanes. We'll get displacement of weather, so we'll get droughts where there was water. We'll get floods where there wasn't any. And it'll all change. And it's all due to the four horsemen of the apocalypse: coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear. So I suggest that it's time that we all take part in fossilfree.org and disinvest in this world-killing form of energy production. Because
let me ask you on the that's, you gave us a macro view. This is a big picture. On the micro level, on the one-on-one level, how does this work?
You mean like fossilfree.org?
No, not the organization, but the concept. How does one basically divest from carbon-based fuels?
I know. It's a tricky deal. And in fact, many of our like institutions, like teachers' unions and so on, these big sums of money, they have a lot of money invested in the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, hoping that the future, you know, that's their hedge against the future. But there might not be a future because of those guys. So I don't know. On a personal level, I personally don't drive. I use public transport. I call the bus my stretch-driven limo. And I drive, you know, I take the bus mostly during off hours, so there's always a seat. But I'm into walking more. I'm into living a smaller lifestyle. I don't know if that's possible for everybody. We've built our infrastructures. You need a car to get from point A to point B. I've sort of centered myself in a Berkeley area where there's public transport and all sorts of, local. I live small village style within a bigger structure. And that's one thing I've personally done. I walk a lot. I walk my neighbor's dogs. I do a lot of exercise and take part in what I call the better parts of life. Keep a minimal, it's a minimal economic lifestyle. I don't choose the big trips and the big cars and all that, but that's just me. I'm not speaking for other people here, but we have to find a way. And, I know I follow solar energy. I know that, that's coming up. That's getting less and less expensive every day. In fact, that's the way to go now. There's companies that even put solar panels on your roof then for free, and then you can plug your electric car. There's a lot of electric cars coming up. I think the future is there, and we're edge runners. That's what we do. Human race are edge runners, but I believe in a future, and I believe in space. I think it's time that we get into space. We have all those comets out there that hit the moon, that hit Russia. We need an international space patrol to get it going, get those people who are in submarines up into the space there to save us from possible real danger. I mean, one comet could ruin the whole planet. So there's bigger things happening in my mind, and I think we're moving forward into a new realm, and I'm very positive myself. So it's fossilfree.org, and check it out and take part in making the world a better place.
Thank you very much, Harvey, for being with us and offering that today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
888-874-4888. This is PRN.FM, and the program is Lead Stories. It's open forum today. John, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Utrice.
Good afternoon.
Yes, you had the excellent show last week and this week. I wanted to talk about the international Pan-African situation, and everybody on the face of the earth is a Pan-African because that's where life began. And we just had the African Union in Addis Ababa. You have Caribbean Week in New York. You have the West Indian Day Parade coming up. And we had people, past, present, and future, who in the Pan-African diaspora has articulated a call for help, health, wealth. We lost great people like Jitu Wiyusi. We lost people like Queen Mother Moore. We lost leaders like all the well, African diaspora, union people. We had great people like yourself and others who have taught us that we as a people on the face of this globe facing immigration issues. My research over 60 years have proven and shown me that if you sit down at any major U.S. airport and do some research on who's coming off the planes and who's being sent back by a color code, black, white, Muslim, Jewish, you would find that 98% of the people who are being sent back are black, whether they come from anywhere in the African diaspora.
I mean, you've thrown out a whole bunch of things, but they're all generalities. Speak to me specifically. Tell me, organize your thought in a way that says to me that, in fact, you really do have some statistics. It sounds to me like you just made that up.
Okay, I understand. And let me give you an example. I'm here now on El Paso. You had a situation where I have a good look at the situation on immigration because of our geographical location right now. Not only that I have a Jamaican passport and a U.S. passport, but I also understand that here they need a coroner for the city of El Paso. They went to England to get someone who is qualified because the last few guys, they got fired or they didn't have one here for 3 years. But this person is not a U.S. citizen. Your show in the last week has spoke about the brain drain, et cetera, et cetera. This city is going to bring this individual. He does not have a U.S. passport, so they're going to make him a citizen, give him a green card, and make him a legal alien, or I don't like to use that word, nationalized citizen, so he could assume the position of a coroner. Okay? Now, what I'm saying, to be more specific, you have a border situation here from Brownsville, Texas to San Diego. You have the Canadian situation. Well, if you juxtapose the racial ratio of the social, economic, political realities of who's coming into this country, why they're coming into this country, why they're using the mulattoes, the mixed races, the Spanish, the Africans, who they had a presence here in the Caribbean basin and the Americas. I don't use borders. When I say African American, I mean everybody from the South Pole to the North Pole on these Americas. I don't use those terminologies.
John, you're all over the place. I want you to streamline your argument today. You're all over the place. So get back on the main route.
The politicians that we elect and the African diaspora and the regular European, the human family, is taxation without proper representation, because the recolonization of Haiti by the Clintons and what they're going to be doing there because gold and oil and has been found there, they want to recolonize Haiti and use the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons to be, in reality, the shadow government of that island. And what is the significance of that to black people in the Western Hemisphere or wherever we occupy?
All right, John, one of the things that I'm going to ask you to do whenever you call the program is, just because you've touched on about 7 or 8 different themes and you haven't followed through to give us, a point, a salient point, and you start from point A to point B to, from point A, from A to Z, and you finish the point. So we get a sense, a cogent sense of what it is your discussion is. So that's going to be your homework. I'm going to give you that piece of homework. It is important because if you have something really worthwhile listening to, or that might be instructive to people listening, if you just kind of, run all over the place, it is hard to make sense in the end of what it is you have to say, because you're not able to put the meat on the bones. You understand?
I agree. And one thing I want to say before
I get
off is that
we
have to begin to use Caribbean Week in New York.
Hold on. You're about now to do another. You're about to introduce yet another.
Caribbean Week in New York, 2006. You see me there marrying a couple people. All that's great for the Caribbean Tourist Organization and the African Union and the West Indian Day Parade. But if we are not able to harness that energy and those numbers.
I've talked about that many times. The issue I'm saying is.
Like you, one of the things I like about you, when you
were like
and that you was doing work to make us be more analytical, is that, and I understand what you're saying to me now, it's true.
Is it true? I'll give you a little bit more slack with this call, but the next call, the minute you get on the air, you have to say, this is the issue I'm talking about today, and take us in a linear fashion from the beginning to the end, and then we say, well, I see where he's going on this particular point. But you've done a great job today, and I thank you for your contribution. But I also give you a little bit of homework. You don't mind, do you? He doesn't mind. He doesn't mind at all. 888-874-4888. We'll take this break, come back to your calls and comments and observations and opinions and ideas and everything else right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and the number is 888-874-4888. Today, it's Open Forum, and we hear next from Monty of New Jersey.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
I'd like to talk about the Bradley Manning case. If I understand correctly.
The brand new, I didn't get that?
The Bradley Manning case.
Oh, okay, fantastic.
So, now, Brother Manning, he's on trial for many different things, but one of the most severe charges is that he is alleged to be guilty about aiding the enemy because somewhere in the stratosphere, information got to somebody that they considered an enemy. I'm just so confused at this time. I know that we went to war in Afghanistan against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, and then they had Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Now, if these are the people that were fighting the Al-Qaeda group, right now we're paying that same Al-Qaeda group in Libya and especially Syria. So if they're going to persecute Bradley Manning for aiding the enemy, that enemy is now our employees being given money by the CIA. So I'm just confused about this whole thing, you know, in terms of who our enemies are, who our employees are, et cetera.
Okay. Well, Bradley Manning, just for everyone to share in the conversation, is the soldier, the intelligence analyst who voluntarily downloaded hundreds of thousands of classified memos and documents and turned them over to WikiLeaks. He pleaded guilty of the charge earlier this year, hoping that that would be the end of it, and he would just take his sentence, which I think would be about 20 years on that charge. But the military decided that they would go ahead with a court-martial because, after all, he was a soldier. And in downloading and making available to a website that is an avowed enemy of secrecy, WikiLeaks, the military is taking the position that it was tantamount to aiding and abetting the enemy because some of the material ended up in the hands of Al-Qaeda. Now, I don't know how they will prove that. The trial is on, so we'll see how they prove that. But that essentially is the military justification for taking him through a court-martial now. And if the guilty sentence there, he will be serving a life sentence. I understand your point, and we've made this discussion here already, that in many cases the United States actually has been aiding and abetting Al Qaeda,
yes,
had been connected with Al Qaeda, and that in fact is one of the points that comes out in the Benghazi, the most recent one, and in the current form, the issue with Syria. The arms liberated from Libya are being shipped via, in fact, that was the charge at U.S. Consul, U.S., I should say, ambassador, allegedly was in Benghazi to supervise the transfer of such weapons to operatives working with Al Qaeda to topple Assad's regime in Syria. So, yes, that is a serious contradiction, but you have to appreciate the fact that they're slightly different because we're looking here. I mean, it's more ironic than anything because here is a strictly military thing they're going through, whether Manning basically committed an act of treason as a soldier. Does that make sense to you?
Being an act of treason, you know, soldiers have a responsibility once they take the oath to not do war crimes. If they see a war crime in progress, they're required to stop some of this stuff. So, to me,
Wait a minute. War crimes as defined how? As in, as defined by whom? All soldiers, okay, if you're in the military, you are given an idea of what constitutes a war crime.
Well, I have to use my common sense as a war crime. For instance, we always talk about how scared we Americans are about the dirty bomb, you know, some radioactive particles in the air. And yet our military left the equivalent of a dirty bomb in Iraq. You know, so, you know, I know you're talking about what is a war crime. If the Americans do it, but if my country does it, it's not a war crime. But if someone does it to us,
I appreciate your argument on a philosophical level, but we still have to deal with the hard matter that, in effect, before us is a military trial. And the question was Bradley Manning willing to accept the likely outcome of his act of basically downloading sensitive and classified material and handing it over to a website which he knew would publish it? That's the question from a legal point.
Well, I understand that, and yes, that's true. I think he will accept the consequences of that act, but I think that there are a lot of other situations, whereas the people that he reported about have gone untethered. They are free, no indictment whatsoever. And of course, we all know about the Obama persecuting the whistleblowers. However, you know, we're going through the same scenario over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
John McCain, he just went to Syria, snuck in and saw the rebels. I guess, I don't know who the good guys are, the bad guys. The UN can't decide who the good guys are or the bad guys are.
In fact, he was photographed with a bad guy who was supposedly part of the Al-Qaeda-related folks who escorted him. One of his escorts was said to be a bad guy.
So technically speaking, he's aiding the enemy also.
But Monty, again, I'm not disagreeing with you, and I'm not challenging you on the philosophical question and on the ethical question or on the moral question. You 100% there. But you seem unwilling to understand or to look at the question from what is actually happening now. And what is happening now is Bradley Manning was caught doing something that in the world of the military is like treason. And the question is, was he willing to accept that when he did this act? And is he still willing to accept the consequences of his act?
Well, still, if he's forced to accept the consequences of his actions, hopefully they won't be too severe. You know, from what I see with the amount of secrecy going on, if we were to open up Pandora's box, there'd probably be, everyone would probably be guilty there. So, you know, I was just saying that it was ironic to me.
Yes, it is. It is. It's very ironic.
Really. But I thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you for your very, very thoughtful presentation today. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. This is Open Forum, your chance to raise the issues you think are important to you and should be aired and given a closer inspection. This is the time to express your views. And this is what I like about Lead Stories, where we get to, you know, without a script, we are conversing and exchanging ideas and challenging each other in a very healthy and respectful way. I really enjoy that. Just as I wait for another call to come in, I just want to remind you of a little piece of homework I would like you to do. This is to assist people who are really, really suffering, and more than that, they actually are dying in Haiti, and that is to ask a congresswoman in Florida, to Representative Frederica Wilson, to urge President Obama to in turn urge the Department of Homeland Security to give the green light to family reunification now, Haitian family reunification now. These children are suffering, and they ought to be with their relatives here. Everything had been okayed quite a while ago, and it's now going into 3 years that these children are not here in the United States where they should be with their relatives. The number to call for Frederica Wilson is 202-225-4506. 202-225-4506. Okay, who's next? Let's hear from you at 888-874-4888. One of the things that we talked about, earlier in this program, there's a sense of the despondency about leadership, black leadership especially. And really, just about every community has the same question, by the way, about their particular leadership. But when this situation with immigration was, you know, very much in the news, I commented on it in the same way I said the same thing about the gun control. We're not in the room. It is meant from the beginning not to involve us, you know. And unless the leadership is insistent on representing its constituency, I mean, there's no reason for anybody in the political realm to say, hey, being extra generous, this is a subject or this is an issue that we're going to be tackling. Do you want to join? It doesn't work that way. It's not about anybody having to bestow a space at the table. It is about people insisting on a space at the table. But if they're not motivated to do it, if they're not motivated to claim it, then they absent themselves and all kinds of things go on in their absence. This is a very important issue, and I will say this, it's going to be very touchy, but I'm going to say it because it's real. There is a mindset that immigration just is not an African-American issue. It's Caribbean people. It's Africans. It's not African-Americans. And they're different. We still have that barrier to overcome. So the political leadership that should be at the table is not there. And I'm not just talking about African-Americans either. you know, there are many, many white leaders who represent a substantial immigrant community, and they're not there either, because this is not, these people are not seen. But in the black community especially, there is this piece of homework that has to be done, and that is the tendency to see others rather than to see one community. It is amazing that we have so much work to do in that regard, a great deal to do in that regard. But that is the situation, and we have to deal with it as it is, and not try to compensate or excuse anything, but just deal with it as it is. Someone wrote me yesterday a little upbraid, which, you know, goes with the territory, saying, you know, why do you rant? you continue to rant against Barack Obama. It's not about ranting. When somebody steps up to the plate and says, hey, I'm qualified and I'm ready and I'm willing and able to take on the job, just elect me and you do it, then that's the deal. You want to do a job, we want to support you to do the job. Now, that's the nature of the relationship. You're accountable. Orville, hello, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you, Trees?
Hello.
There are so many things to talk about, but let me just say, you talked about politicians, and I was on Facebook yesterday, and there's a gentleman named John Foy, who is running for office, and I believe it's probably the mayorship. But his post basically said something to the effect of, there were 25 people shot over the weekend, and we have to do something about this now, and no one is going to become the mayor unless they present, I'm paraphrasing, a plan of action. No one should, you know, is going to be. So I asked, well, what makes you say no one will have the mayorship without a plan? What makes this different, this particular election? So then he got back to me and he said something to the effect of, my plan is to, very broad generalities, like a goal. So I said, okay, you gave a goal. What is your plan? Because in his post, he said no one is going to be elected to mayorship without a plan. So he was giving me a goal, but I did not see it as a plan, and I was asking. So he seemed to get very terse.
when you asked for particulars, a bill of particulars, you found that there was a one?
Yes, and not even, you know, particulars, you know, but just some particulars, you know. If you say you want to feed people, and I say, well, that's a goal, you want to feed people, okay, how do you plan on feeding people? And, you know, and it seemed that everyone else on the post, they start to defend him. Which I find very interesting, because I would think that they would say, yes, you know, we would like to hear a plan.
No, I mean, what you're saying, and we kind of, you know, chuckling, but this is very serious, because this is, in fact, the norm. People resent it when you ask them for specifics, because the notion of leadership has been so casual and trivialized in our community. It's just, you know, hey, I'm running this year, elect me. Well, why? Because, you know, I'm running. You know, as if you don't have to explain anything to anybody. You don't have to have a plan. You don't have to, you know. I got into deep trouble once when there was a group that said they were really disgusted with the quality of education available to black and Latino children in the city of New York, and they are going to start up their own educational effort and so forth, which was laudatory. Great. So they went around talking in the community about their efforts. The effort was to build a school that would deal strictly with young black kids. Great. I said, that's a really worthy thing. Now, where is your syllabus? And they actually mounted a huge campaign against me. How dare I ask for a syllabus? Well, you know, the point is, if you're offering an alternative, I'd like to see what your syllabus looks like. I'd like to see how credible an effort this is going to be.
Yeah, if you say you're going to create a business to sell hot dogs, that's great, you know, but could you please show me the business plan? You know,
exactly.
I find the quality of not just the leadership, but the people, we the people, to ask questions. And if we're not willing to ask questions, when someone else asks questions, don't try to shut them down, you know. And mm-hmm. and I think it's on us, like you said earlier, it's really not about a politician. It's when you really look at it, it's about the people. Do you punish them? Do you say, hey, you know, we elected you for this and you have not touched it? And, you know, there is nothing else to say. I, you know, really don't want to hear anything. Please don't come with anything. Leave nicely, you know, gracefully. You know, that should be the end of it.
Yeah. The time is long past that we should be this casual about the issues that are having incredible impact in our communities, negative impact. And we still do not punish people who make mistakes. When somebody comes forward as a would-be leader and you are satisfied or you feel, you know, that this person would do a job. If the person is not doing the job, it's your job to tell them they're not doing the job.
And when they say they're going to do something because they want the job, and you ask them, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
let me just say, Mr. Foy, which I was not picking on him, I was just trying to get some information, and I feel that if Mr. Foy cannot present an answer reasonably, then people should really, again, I would like to bring people to the polls for Mr. Foy, if I find that he is putting something forward that is a plan that I see that's logical and doable, and you know, and who is in his corner? I'd like to know who's in your corner, who will back you when you put this forward. Who will you? You know, I would like to hear who will you chop. What programs will you revamp? I'd like to hear some specifics.
Good point. All Thanks right. a lot, Orville. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. And I want to thank you for your considered opinions. This is good. It's always great to exchange opinions and ideas and to give each other room to breathe about things that may not necessarily be strictly on the menu. And that's the whole point of a free-form dialogue when we have open forum, to just say what's on your mind, raise what issues you think need to be raised or things that you're concerned about, because chances are other people are concerned about them too. So that's great. So one more time, I just want to remind us, please, if you can do this, it's just a phone call. And all we need to do is make a phone call to help these children to speed up, to expedite the process of family reunification. They are people who are suffering inordinately. As you know, the earthquake hit 3 years ago, and this is as long as these children have been waiting. Everything has been signed off on. Everybody has agreed to it in Congress, and the mayors of different cities, they all have agreed to it. The only thing is that the Department of Homeland Security has just not expedited the process. And if we call Congresswoman Frederica Wilson, 202-225-4506, and just kindly and politely remind her that you have a concern that this process should be expedited so that children could be out of harm's way and in the loving arms and homes of relatives who want to care for them. Make that call. And you'll do yourself and everybody in the community a great favor. So we'll see each other tomorrow. And thank you for listening today. Bye-bye.